Good afternoon, gentlemen. Gentlemen, the clerk sent you a letter a couple of weeks ago asking you to be prepared to argue whether the pleading requirements in general litigation equally applies to contempt. That's one issue, and of course, one of the other issues we need to resolve is whether it's a final judgment or an interlocutory judgment determining the issues of the case. So we'll start. Mr. Evans, would you like to reserve any rebuttal?
2 minutes if it's out, please.
All right, sir.
May it please the court. Your honors, my name is Ron Evans. I am representing the appellant, Courtney Bender, and I represented her down below. Of course, foreshadowed, this is a bit of an unusual and unconventional appeal necessitated by an unconventional order that was entered below. In sum, there was a show cause requested for civil contempt, requesting, as is the standard, for a fine or imprisonment or both. But civil contempt of court is of course designed, as opposed to criminal contempt, to enforce compliance with the party's agreement or any previous court decree. There was that standard language, fine or imprisonment or both. There was no request for a monetary judgment. That was in the pleading and order. A hearing was held, was taken under advisement, and thereafter the court entered an order without the endorsement of counsel, not holding the appellant in contempt. There was no real finding of contempt.
Does that necessarily then means it's not a final judgment, right?
Well, it may not be. It was an order adjudicating the principles.
I mean, the definition of a final judgment is resolves all issues before the court.
Absolutely.
So,
it is not a final order.
Okay.
I can see that.
And so it's whether or not it adjudicates.
Adjudicates the principles of the cause.
Right.
Pursuant to the Pinkard case that was recently cited with approval and the court's unpublished Murray versus Sensabaugh case, June 10th, 2014. So we are contending that it is, in fact, an order adjudicating the principles.
Let me have that cite again.
The most recent unpublished case was Murray versus Sensabaugh, record number 2100-12-2, per curiam opinion of this court, June 10, 2014. Citing with approval the Pinkard case that stated, furthermore, the order is not an interlocutory order that adjudicates the principles of a cause in rejecting the appeal in that case, because it, quote, does not adjudicate the underlying cause in the adoption proceeding by granting or denying the petition. It does not, and quoting the Pinkard case here, quote, respond to the chief object of the suit, end quote. The chief object of the suit was apparently to hold her in contempt. The court adjudicated the contempt without really saying that she was in contempt.
What the ruling was, or was the ruling simply that that the appellant violated the property settlement agreement? And isn't there a difference between that and contempt?
I believe there is. This was not merely a breach of contract action. In a breach of contract action, one of the measures of damages, if they had properly pled it, could have been a monetary judgment. But this was a contempt proceeding. That's the only thing that the appellee asked for. To fine her or imprison her or both for her civil contempt of court.
Well, I'm somewhat confused.
Yes.
Would you agree, seems like you did, that the this decree only addressed whether she violated the property settlement agreement?
It purportedly addressed whether or not there was a willful, or what it was charged with doing is determining whether or not there was a willful and deliberate subject to contempt violation of the property settlement agreement. Not all violations of agreements rise to the level of contempt.
I agree with that.
Yes, sir.
But, well, go on, I'm sorry, go on.
That's fine. The court proceeded to order her to pay the monetary award by a date certain, which is sort of analogous to sentencing her, if this were a criminal proceeding, without a finding of guilt, and also is more analogous to a criminal contempt holding, which would be to punish her for her willful failure and refusal to comply with the court's order, not to secure future compliance, but to punish her for previous compliance. So although the pleading asked for civil contempt, the court granted, without saying it, a criminal contempt citation. The order down below also provided a remedy not only not requested by the appellee in his prayer for relief, but also imposing a monetary condition on the appellant, different from that to which they'd agreed the property settlement agreement, ratified, affirmed, and incorporated in violation of Section 2079C. It was different from what they had agreed, and the court, in our estimation, was prohibited from doing that. The court also put the appellant in a difficult position because it dispensed with the endorsement requirement of counsel, ordered her to pay it by a date certain, which
happened. Well, that's not before us, is it?
What, sir?
The endorsement.
No, the endorsement is not, but this is, I'm arguing this because it puts us more in a position that the Weizenbaum litigants were placed in.
That was where there was a monetary judgment and they said it's appealable because otherwise they could levy on the judgment.
That's correct.
Take all the necessary enforcement action.
Absolutely. Although it was a partial lump sum award, it was clearly by its own terms not a final order, but it was deemed by the Weizenbaum court to be appealable.
Well, is there a judgment in this case?
Without no.
The judge saying that?
Well, no. Just said you have to pay $10,000 by 21 days from now.
Or agree on something else that it still
or, leaves. You know, the or I didn't want to know about.
Right.
And so I was placed in a position of, and I was not compelled to believe that the judge was going to change her mind. And so what I did was determine to appeal it.
But no judgment was ever entered on that $10,000, right?
No.
It's never docketed?
Not that I know of.
And no, there was no finding of contempt because it was left pay the $10,000 or something else that you agree upon?
Well, there was no finding of contempt. There was no finding specifically that the evidence was sufficient to hold her in contempt, but give her an opportunity to purge. There was just, this is what I've heard, this is what I find, and you've got to pay $10,000 in 21 days.
Well, isn't it a reasonable inference from that? I mean, they were there on a contempt, and the trial court never found contempt, never found no contempt one way or the other. Isn't it a reasonable interpretation of that order that before the court determined contempt, while it found that the appellant violated the property settlement agreement, trial court gave her an opportunity to pay and make whole on her agreement and then would determine attorney's fees and contempt at a later time? Is that a fair reading of that order?
It may be, sir, but the only thing that I knew was that she had to pay $10,000 and maybe go after him should it be a wrong ruling and appeal, on appeal, but she posted the bond.
Could he have executed on that $10,000 award at that time?
I don't know that he would have had to if she did not pay it timely. I assume that the court would take action either on its own, issue a capias if requested, or another show cause to...
But isn't that the key? That wouldn't somebody have to do something else before he would get paid? The court would have to order it, say, or tell her to do it, or hold her in contempt finally, or something. So I guess that's why... Why is this fully adjudicating the principles of the cause? Why is this an interlocutory order that's appealable to us because it fully adjudicates the principles?
It is appealable just as was the order in Weizenbaum because of the position.
But you've already indicated that they couldn't execute on the judgment. It wasn't a judgment that was subject to execution, but later on there could be some consequences if he didn't pay it. So why is that anywhere close to... forgot the name of the case.
Weizenbaum.
Yeah.
Well, there was no judgment on it. As a matter of fact, it would have been better had there been a judgment entered because she could have gone about satisfying the judgment.
Well, it's probably better for you because that might be Weizenbaum, but not here.
But she was placed in an even worse position than was the person at Weizenbaum, because she faced what I believe to be fairly certain incarceration unless she came up with $10,000 by the 21st day after the entry of the order. That is a much more precarious position than Mr. Weizenbaum was in. And I had nowhere to go but to ask her people to post the bond for cost and suspension and come to this court for relief. And I believe that.
But she still hasn't been held in contempt. There's no contempt order.
Well, it doesn't say she's in contempt, but it punished her. This is in the nature of a punishment for her willful failure and refusal to comply. And the court didn't say whether or not it was holding her in contempt.
But to enforce, for a trial court to enforce a contract that it had already ratified, why is that a punishment as opposed to simply enforcing a contract? Not every time that somebody enforces a contract is it punishment, is it?
But it was not enforcing this contract. This contract did not provide for monetary damages. This contract provided for a specific mechanism whereby the parties would decide how to resolve their personal property, furniture, and household furnishings issues. It never provided for a monetary award.
But he never tried that.
Excuse me?
They tried that, and she wouldn't let him walk through the house and look at the property, and they never reached agreement. He had to go out and buy property on it.
Well, we may be stuck with that as a finding. The evidence down below was that she did, in fact, allow a walkthrough. He produced a list, and at that point in time, demanded $10,000. And she said, well, it's not $10,000. Let's go by the contract.
Well, didn't earlier he said $2,000?
No, that was what she offered.
She had offered.
Okay,
that was her.
Yeah, the 10 was pay 10 or nothing, mm-hmm. And did not request that, of course, in the pleading that gave rise to the show cause. But we believe the Pinkard case says that it has to respond to the chief object of the suit, and I believe the chief object of the suit, which is holding her in contempt, or at least, if not holding her in contempt, punishing her for her contempt, is exactly why we are here. Now, the Pinkard case doesn't say that it has to respond to the only object of the suit. It says the chief object of the suit. And I think the chief object of the suit was spoken to in terms of what the remedy that the appellant was requesting, although he did not request it in his pleading. He requested the $10,000, which was not only not pled, but inconsistent pursuant to 2079C with the party's property settlement agreement. With regard to whether or not this being a contempt proceeding takes it out of the other ordinary rules of pleading and the ordinary remedies that the court has, there are other instances where this court and other courts were constrained by 2079C from doing what it might otherwise have thought fair and equitable. First of all, this court has held that it is prohibited from awarding attorney fees on appeal where the property settlement agreement down below said, quote, neither party will pay attorney fees to the other. This court found itself bound not to award attorney fees under those circumstances in the unpublished opinion.
In a civil contempt context, the trial court can fashion a remedy to make the victim, bad word, but make the victim whole.
In fact, there's
a case, and I don't remember the name of it, where in regard to civil contempt, the trial court even authorized the city to enter the person's home to check on certain violations.
If it is requested, which it wasn't here, and if it is not in violation of Section 2079C, which it was here. This court, the case that I was talking about is Wallace versus Wallace, an unpublished opinion of this court, July 31st, 2012. This court has also held that a trial court is prohibited from awarding attorney fees in support modification proceedings where the property settlement agreement only said provided for attorney fees in the event of breach. That's the Rutledge case, 45 Virginia App, 56, 2005.
Mr. Evans, you're into your rebuttal, but you're more than welcome to continue or reserve the rest of your time.
I think I'd better proceed, Your Honor.
All right, sir.
This court has also held that a trial court is prohibited from awarding life insurance as a remedy for husbands depriving wife of her entitlement to pension benefits under Judge Beal's opinion in the Lewis case. I was on the wrong side of that one. But in any event, the court in Lewis said the property settlement agreement.
Statutory reason for that one, if I recall, too.
Yeah, yes, sir. The property settlement agreement, the Lewis court said, did not address life insurance, so the court did not derive the authority to order it under its terms. Further, it said 20-107.3G2 specifically prohibits an award of such fees. The wife was entitled to some remedy, the Lewis court said, but the wrong one was chosen here. The court, in an effort to craft a remedy, is given broad discretion, but can't do so in violation of the statute. The Lewis case says that. The statute violated was section 20-107.3G2 there. The statute here is section 20-109.C, when the remedy awarded was not only not asked for, but was in clear violation of the party's property settlement agreement. The court was bound to follow, even in contempt cases. 2079C says the court is restrained in cases other than contempt proceedings. It says the court is restrained from imposing any condition, monetary, non-monetary, other than what's in the agreement.
All right, thank you, Mr. Evans.
Yes.
Good afternoon.
Your Honor, the trial court has the inherent authority to enforce this decree, and therefore submit the pleading requirements that were referred to by Mr. Evans in his brief, in his appeal, do not apply. In fact, though, the parties were, what is required is notice of the alleged breach and an opportunity to cure it, and that was present in this case. Plaintiff, appellant, clearly had, or not, but Ms. Bender, clearly had notice of what the alleged breach was. This petition had been filed four times between October 2012 and June 2013, and therefore she had clear notice that she was being alleged to be in breach of the agreement, and because it was incorporated into the decree, of the court's order. The court's order does refer simply to the property settlement agreement, but it does also refer to review of the record, which I submit reviewing the record would include reviewing the final decree, which would give it the power to rule on the contempt issue. The parties clearly understood that this was a matter of contempt, as was referenced in the transcript of hearing. Ms. Bender's attorney at least four times referenced a contempt proceeding, page 41, 42, 46, and 51 of the appendix. I submit, judges, that he would have been able to, if he had any objections to the court's authority to issue an order relating to the contempt, he should have voiced those at the hearing. And in addition, he was able to voice those in the in his petition for motion to reconsider the order, which was filed timely within the 21 days, in which the court simply refused to, I infer the court simply refused to hear the matter because it did not enter it did not void the judgment pending any kind of hearing on the motion to reconsider. And therefore, the objections were before the court, and the appellant clearly had notice of what the alleged breach was and had an opportunity to cure that. At no point did the appellant make an effort to cure the opportunity, even after the hearing, which established, I believe in the transcript, that she was in breach. The facts in the hearing indicated that she was in breach, and therefore she had the opportunity to cure that and simply chose not to do it. Instead of finding her in contempt, I believe the court showed a great degree of mercy here and gave her the opportunity, a threefold opportunity to cure this. I submit that a proper reading of the court's order is not just the two options, which there are clearly two, which are to have been argued by counsel for the appellant, that the $10,000 or to begin negotiations. I submit that another option was to pay him half of what he alleged was on the list, which is certainly almost $10,000, but not quite. And therefore, that's another option that was open to her. Either she could take the $10,000, which was initially offered as an alternative, not as a demand, but as an alternative by the appellee in 2012 when he submitted. He submitted four lists in accordance with the property settlement agreement and the decree. Subsequently the decree.
Wouldn't the appellant have another option, and that is to come back before the court and say, don't hold me in contempt of court because I have lost my job, I've been in the hospital, I have tremendous medical bills, and therefore there's a reason, there's good cause why I haven't paid this $10,000?
That was not done. If there were such a reason, Judge, that could have been submitted to the court.
But I mean down the road after that period of time.
After the 21 days or the 60 days for the...
Whatever period of time. But there, when there would ultimately, the way I read it, there'd be an ultimate review at somewhere down the road, whether she paid the money or not, or what reason, if she had any, why she didn't.
Right. She would be able to, if there were a reason to explain the contempt, that the order as drafted did not preclude that. She would have been able to offer some alternative, the court is correct that some other action would have had to have been taken to enforce to enforce that order if she didn't comply, either by the court's action or, I submit in this case, most likely by the appellees. He would have been required to go to the court and say, well, she didn't negotiate with me, she didn't give me $10,000, and she didn't give me half my list. And therefore, I ask that now the court find her in contempt. That's a clear indication this is not a final or adjudicatory order as far as that's understood, and that this did not adjudicate
principles of the cause.
Well, it went to them, but it wasn't the final resolution thereof. It gave three different options. Also, some of the case law referred to by the counsel, there's regard to kind of extraneous issues as far as attorney's fees and such relating to the enforcement. This is about the enforcement, not whether you get fees for enforcing it. This is for actually enforcing the agreement. There are distinctions between enforcing and modifying, submit there's no requirement to use the word contempt, but I think that given the nature of the proceedings here and the fact that it was very clear to all parties at the hearing that this was for contempt, that the court actually most likely intentionally chose not to use the word contempt. There's a contempt order from 2012 against the appellee where the word contempt was used by the court, and of course it was drafted by counsel for appellant, but regardless, the court apparently found that language was proper in that context. Here, the court, I'm only inferring, but it seems that it's logical that it would have used the word contempt if it wanted to make a final finding at that point. But it wanted to give her the opportunity to cure this. And as had been her pattern throughout the from 2011 forward, she did not do that. Obviously, I disagree that this is an appealable order. I think it's interlocutory, and that I would ask the court to uphold the finding of the order of the trial court. And if she doesn't cure it, then he can go back to court and ask for a finding of contempt. But at this point, I submit she still has the opportunity to cure it. Instead, we're here before your honors. If we have any further questions or anything you wish to address, please.
You said it is interlocutory, but you do not think it adjudicates the principles of the calls?
No, it gives her, there are three options. It's not final. It does not say, you must do this.
Right.
It doesn't even say, you must do this or you'll be found in contempt. It just says, do this.
So your argument is then the remedy should be we dismiss it?
Yes. And just allow the order to stand, allow her to cure it if she wishes, and if she doesn't, then Mr. Bennett.
She would have a right to appeal if we dismiss it. She would have a right to appeal upon final judgment of the circuit court.
Well, then I submit that perhaps at this juncture, given the, it would be preferable just to find it's not appealable at this point, because that would also allow him the opportunity to, or her rather, to appeal after, if the court were to find her contempt, and there's a valid basis for appealing that.
For the record, would you state your name?
Michael Gunlich, Judge.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. We'll greet counsel, and the court is adjourned for the day.